Hey fam, it is Phoenix in the wine cellar. Thanks for hanging out with me. I am about to do a real quick podcast just because because we do have people who pay for content, which means they actually want the fucking content. And two, I'm still trying to get around this whole engineering thing, working it out, you know. So I think this is a good time to get a little bit of practice in. William is working late today, so it's just going to be me. But you all love me, so that's okay, and you're going to hang out with me in the wine cellar. So, as usual, we have some news, we have some comment. I don't think we have any updates yet about any older stories, but we do have some new stuff coming in. I did want to talk a little bit today as well about fake news. There is a particular website that has fake news, and they've been getting a lot of attention lately. I wanted to address that and just, you know, some general tips of how to spot fake news, right? How you can tell if an article is fake or not. And I don't think I have any personal journal updates, at least nothing that's fun, you know? It's that typical adult bullshit where you're like, wow, let me go wait in a line so I can sign papers and write someone a check and give them my money. That's pretty much what adulthood is. If you're not at work, you're dealing with bureaucratic bullshit. I swear. And you know, I used to be mad when I was a kid at my teachers because they would always be giving us that fucking busy work shit, you know? I did not realize how much they were preparing me for adulthood. When I was a kid, I had no idea how much of my fucking adulthood is bureaucratic fucking bullshit, and I hate it. But there it is. On the upside, my car insurance is paid, my stickers are renewed, I got my emissions test done. I'm tired, I'm annoyed, I hate lines, but it's all fucking done. So, let's get into the wine cellar. Let's do some news, comments, headlines, possibly snarky commentary. If you're lucky, even a little bit of humor. Definitely some light skin sensitivity. This is, after all, the Light Skin News Network. Yeah, let's fucking do it. And let's start with our show opener, because I know how to do that now. Check me out.
Now, sisters and brothers, we know we got over by the blood, the sweat, and the tears of sheroes and heroes, some whose names we know and some whose names we do not know. But I want to tell you something. We have been here before. Now, the only difference is we got some company, Rev. We got our gay lesbian sisters and brothers with us this time. We got our Hispanic, Asian, Native American sisters and brothers with us this time. I think Dr. Reverend Martin Luther King said we may not have gotten here on the same ship, but we are in the same boat right now.
In Father Teresa's Wine Cellar, we believe all oppression is intersectional. And this means our analysis of current events frequently includes discussion of difficult and explicit content. Any combination of the following topics could be included in our show: murder, rape, war, climate change, racism, sexism, violence, sexual violence, homophobic violence, heterocentrism, discrimination and abuse against individuals of nonconformist sexuality, domestic violence, child abuse, child rape, child neglect, elderly abuse, verbal abuse, police brutality, microaggressions, ableism, cyberbullying, genital mutilation, ideological extremism, and people just being total fucking assholes.
You know, I think I need like a super cut, right, of William just saying "all right." I think that would be kind of cool, wouldn't it? Because then we could just have him do that, and then I have the super cut, and then just put it on the back end of every show opener. So it's like that vintage, nostalgic wine cellar where he comes in with the "all right" after, you know, the show opener and the trigger warning. And it's just like all the old shows, because I don't have a fucking "all right." Yeah, I gotta get him to do that. Like, I don't know, maybe make a petition or a Facebook poll and get him to do it. and go back and clip it out from old episodes? I don't know. We're going to work it out, though. All right. So, I said news. I said comments. I said headlines, because that's what I fucking do, really. As far as headlines go, we have, I have a tickle in my nose, and I feel like I have to sneeze, but I'm not actually about to sneeze. Ugh. Anyways, ex-gym teacher 31 sentenced for cemetery sex romp with teen boy. You know, these are your fucking people. Seriously, who the fuck is having sex with teenagers? And not only that, but doing it in a cemetery. I am so bothered, and I don't know if it's just because we have a 24-hour news cycle and social media, how often it seems that adults are sexually engaged with children. Like, I don't... Maybe I just never noticed before, but the older I get, the more I see it, and it is fucking ridiculous. I can't fucking stand that shit. We talked about the mudslide in Sierra Leone. There's an additional 30 more dead, still several hundreds unaccounted for. Humanitarian efforts are underway. German police, there's a typo in the headline, awesome. German police seize orange ecstasy pills that have Donald Trump's name and face on them. Okay. India Supreme Court strikes down instant divorce for Muslims. Attack on Barron Trump's clothes by a website sparks outrage. I guess that's the most fucking outrageous thing going on in the news right now. Somebody made fun of Barron. Who gives a fuck? Treasury Secretary's wife boasts of travel on government plane, touts Hermes, which is one of those bougie brands. She was wearing the scarf and bragging about it on her Instagram. Because those are the people that you fucking want, right? You want the politicians who are like, look who I'm wearing and how much it cost, peasant. You know. Yeah, that's what's going on as far as headlines go. As far as actual stories, oh man, I hate doing this to y'all because it's always fucking depressing as shit, right? But here we go. A boy detained for 707 days did a little dance when finally released from ICE custody. Which is like, that's the fucking state of shit right now. We are detaining children for 700 days. That's almost 2 years. What the fuck? The judges who released Antonio and three other boys with their mothers on their own recognizance chastised Immigration Customs Enforcement for flouting an established federal order that limits the amount of time that children can be held to 20 days. When 8-year-old Antonio, name changed to protect his privacy, appeared in a Pennsylvania immigration court Monday via video stream, it marked the first time a judge had laid eyes on him after 707 days in detention. An asylum seeker from El Salvador, he said hello to the judge in English, which he learned to speak while detained, and then he listened carefully. Which, oh man, this is on Rewire. I don't like that fucking line. He learned how to say words in English while he was detained. Like, that is so, like, subtly, but yet laying into the whole, he's one of the good ones, he's gonna learn to speak like us. Like, I fucking see you, it's not slick. Antonio knew the moment the judge ruled to set him free. He smiled so big and wide, and he did a little dance. It was very cute, said his attorney, Bridget Cambria. More extraordinary scenes played out Thursday at bond hearings for 4-year-old Carlos and 16-year-old Michael, and for a 3-year-old last Monday. All were held for 22 months at the Berks County Residential Center in Pennsylvania. At one point, Carlos said to the judge, unprovoked, "I want to get out of here with my mom." And in the end, that's what he got. The question the hearings addressed was not whether the boys had legitimate asylum requests based on violence they fled in Honduras and El Salvador, but whether they should remain detained while their cases were reviewed. The judges released all of the boys with their mothers on their own recognizance and chastised ICE for flouting the established federal order. It was a remarkable turn of events for four families who were all part of an ACLU, American Civil Liberties Union lawsuit, which argued they had a right for a federal judge to review their denied asylum claim. During a lengthy appeals process, the government successfully fought to keep the participating mothers and children detained at the residential center in Pennsylvania. Well, I mean, yeah, of course they fucking did. You know, I think that the thing there is we need to remember this is essentially a prison, right? A detention center is basically a prison, and prisons are about profit, and there is profit to be made as long as beds are full, right? When beds aren't full, that's when corporations lose money, and that's when it becomes a problem. So yes, they want people locked up, whether they committed a crime or not, because money is more important than human lives. Yay, capitalism. As time wore on, the women went on hunger strikes, drawing attention to their calls for release. In May, the U.S. Supreme Court declined to review a lower court's rejection of the case, and 10 families were deported. The four who stayed were eligible for special immigrant juvenile status and a green card, but had remained detained until now. So, like, that's the fucked up thing, though, right? Because they did all this, had to go on hunger strikes, were locked up for almost 2 years, and they still don't know if they're actually going to be allowed to stay. It just says that they qualify, right? They are eligible for a special status in a green card, but they might not actually get it. So they might still fucking get deported and have to go back to where they started from, which is also extremely fucked up because the United States and its imperialist bullshit means that we have fucked up the countries that these folks are from, caused unrest, caused violence. So they come here for safety and still can't have it. That's great. Yay, USA. We're making America great again. And, yeah, that's just fucked up. My heart breaks for them. I hope they get to stay, but, I mean, I guess if we're being realistic, it's unlikely, right? Shit. Ugh. Alright, so let's see, what other bullshit is the government doing these days? Oh, here we go. Coal mining health study is halted by Interior Department. Who is shocked by that? Washington, the Interior Department has ordered a halt to a scientific study begun under President Obama of the public health risks of mountaintop removal coal mining. Huh. The National Academies of Sciences, Engineering, and Medicine, which was conducting the study, said in a statement Monday they were ordered to stop because the Interior Department is now conducting an agency-wide budgetary review. So basically, they're doing shit that's killing people and ruining the environment, and then said, but we don't have money to research the effects to tell us that we're wrong, so we can just keep doing what the fuck we're doing. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Last year, West Virginia officials asked the Obama administration to look into the health effects of mountaintop mining, a technique used to extract underlying coal. Now, see, I wish William was here for this, because he could tell me if I'm wrong. I think it's Bob Kincaid is the guy who talks about this all the time. He's a podcaster. He's on Twitter. I think he's associated with, like, the Ring of Fire podcaster network. You know, whatever that is. Yeah. Network, group of people who closely work together and share web space. Something like that. Collective? Google's collective. That sounds very anti-capitalist. It's a collective. But, yeah, I think that's Bob Kincaid, who's hilarious because he has this really deep southern accent because he's from West Virginia, but he says like really, really woke shit, and it's kind of hilarious to listen to someone with that accent say things about, you know, racism and call it anti-blackness and things like that. But he's also very passionate about mountaintop removal because he lives there and his family and friends and neighbors are dying because their air and water is being contaminated. All right. So the practice, which dates to the 1960s, involves mining companies dumping rubble into surrounding valleys and streams, leading to extensive pollution in many cases, which I think we did a story about that last year where, people's water was just, it was like fucking yellow in West Virginia. It was disgusting. The National Academies assembled a 12-member expert committee to assess, quote, new approaches to safeguard the health of residents living near the mines. Yeah, how about you stop fucking removing the coal? How about we stop using coal? That would safeguard the health of residents. Just saying. Just saying. Environmental groups and Democrats, sharply criticized the Interior Department decision. Mountaintop removal mining is shown to be a cause of lung cancer, heart disease, and other medical problems, said Representative Raul Grijalva of Arizona, the ranking Democrat on the House Committee on Natural Resources. Stopping the study is a ploy to stop science in its tracks and keep the public in the dark about health risks as favor to the mining industry, pure and simple. Luke Popovich, a spokesman for the National Mining Association, said the decision to halt the study may have been justified. Oh. So, the guy who works for the Mining Association says it's justified to halt the study. I see ya, Luke. I see ya. The National Institute of Environmental Health Sciences and Health Sciences concluded in July, after examining available studies, it didn't see evidence justifying a health hazard, noting that no conclusive evidence connected mountaintop mining with health effects, and studies often failed to account for extraneous health and lifestyle effects. I just want you to know that the guy who gets paid by the National Mining Association hung out with a bunch of politicians to stop a study because he thinks that dumping coal and poisonous waste into your water source isn't necessarily harmful to you. Capitalism is the fucking best, y'all. It's the best. Researchers are still trying to get a handle on health impacts for people living in nearby Appalachian communities, many of whom are poor and have other health problems. Mountaintop removal, which has occurred on at least 500 Appalachian mountains, has clogged streams and waterways with heavy metals such as selenium and manganese, which can be toxic in high concentrations. Oh, so things that are toxic in your water aren't actually unhealthy for you and aren't guaranteed to cause disease. Got it. The dust kicked up by these explosions can also be considered a hazard. One 2010 review published in Science found elevated mortality rates as well as increased incidence of lung cancer and kidney disease in counties near mountaintop mining, because it's not harmful for you, obviously. A 2011 study of Central Appalachia found higher rate of birth defects in the area, because it's not harmful to you, obviously. So, let's see. The $1 million National Academy study began last year. Wait, so this whole study only cost $1 million? Which I know to like poor people like me, $1 million is a lot of money, but it cost Trump $1 million in Secret Service money to go golfing on a Sunday. Like, really? We built a $1 billion plane that can't fly. We gave billions of dollars to Israel, but they can't find $1 million for this study? Okay. Jake Glantz, a spokesman for the West Virginia Department of Environmental Protection, said the state was not aware of the review. He added the state will continue to provide information if and when the study resumes. Okay. The study is not going to resume because they want to kill people and keep them poor and uninformed. So, no, I think we already know that the study is not happening, but thanks for your concern, I guess. Or something. Wow. Oh, this is fantastic. My phone just froze up. This is what happens, right? So I have a list of show notes, and then I just click all the tabs and open them on my phone. But sometimes I have too many tabs open because I'm reading other things and looking at other, you know, researching other things too, in addition to the show notes. So I think I have like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14. I have 19 tabs open on my phone right now, and my phone does not appreciate it. It is letting me know it does not appreciate it. All right, so more news. Columbus, Ohio. A man who shot and wounded a judge outside a county courthouse my words are not happening today. I don't know what is wrong with my face. Let's try that again. Columbus, Ohio. A man who shot and wounded a judge outside a county courthouse before being gunned down by a probation officer was the father of a high school football player who was convicted of rape in 2013, say authorities. Jefferson County Judge Joseph Brazis Jr. was shot Monday morning near the courthouse in Steubenville, across the Ohio River from West Virginia's northern panhandle and just west of Pittsburgh. Authorities identified the gunman as Nathaniel, a.k.a. Nate Richmond, the father of Malik Richmond. Malik, then 17, served about 10 months in juvenile lockup after being convicted with another Steubenville High School player of raping a 16-year-old girl in an alcohol-fueled party in 2012. I appreciate the fact. No, I don't appreciate the fact. But peep how they added in alcohol-fueled party. Like, it was just wild, and the kids were being wild, and then this horrible thing happened because alcohol, right? Not because these guys were fucking predatory-ass rapists. Not because they were looking for an opportunity to degrade and exploit someone. No, it happened because it was an alcohol-fueled party. Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. So if these guys were never around alcohol, they'd never rape anybody, right? Yeah. All right. The case brought international attention to the eastern Ohio city of 18,000 residents and led to allegations of a cover-up to protect the football team. Investigators are looking for a motive in the shooting and haven't found a connection to the rape case. Okay. I mean, all right. If you say so. A visiting judge from Hamilton County, where Cincinnati is located, handled the majority of the rape case. Records show Brazis was overseeing a wrongful death suit that Nate Richmond filed in April against Jefferson County Metropolitan Housing Authority. A hearing on a motion by the Housing Authority to dismiss punitive damages was set for August 28th, and messages were left for Richmond's attorneys. Richmond had a few traffic violations in the past years, and several years ago, he was arrested on various domestic assault and violence charges, court records show. So it says he was arrested for domestic violence and assault, but it doesn't say if he was convicted or not. That's interesting. The prosecutor said Brazis was shoved to the ground during Monday's attack. Courthouse video shows the judge and Richmond firing about 5 times each. Oh, so the judge fucking shot him back? Okay. All right, well, apparently the judges over there go to work with guns. All right. Brazis was talking after being wounded. Steubenville City Manager James Mavromatis. What the fuck is wrong with y'all's names? Brazis and Mavromatis. All right, fine. Mavromatis told WTOV-TV, the judge was flown to a Pittsburgh area hospital. Ohio Governor John Kasich said that the judge would survive. The attack had to be intentional because people knew about the reserved spots where judges parked, says one of Brazizi's judicial colleagues. Judge Joseph Karabi, what the fuck is wrong with y'all names? What, seriously? Mavromatis, Brazis, and Karabi? Fine. Judge Karabi said he and the county's 2 other judges park in reserve spots next to the courthouse. The judges then walk a few feet down to what's known as the Courthouse Alley, which is a side entrance into the building. Everybody knows who parks there. It's not an accident that this happened. He was clearly an intended target. Malik Richmond is now 21, is currently on the Youngstown State football team, but isn't allowed to play in any games. Wait, hold on. Oh my god. So we love athletes so much that someone who's convicted of rape gets sentenced, does time, gets out, and still gets to go to a university and be on the team, but just can't play until the punishment period is over. But rape culture doesn't exist. Okay. News of his participation drew a wave of criticism in the university community recently, and a petition was started to keep him from playing. Karabi said Brazis is known as an avid hunter. What the fuck does that have to do with anything? That is a weird cut. It literally went from talking about Malik Richmond having flack for being on the team to the literally the next quote is Karabi says Brazis is an avid hunter. He's fair, hardworking, well-liked, and a tough son of a gun. The fuck kind of... Ugh. He's intelligent, he can cut to the chase, spots issues, and resolves problems. This is fucking ridiculous. So that's happening. So once again, Steubenville is in the news. And it says that the father was gunned down, but it doesn't say if he died or not. So I guess maybe I will do a follow-up on that one to see if he actually passed away or he just got shot and arrested. I don't know. Okay. Okay, we've taken down 2 of the tabs so far. My phone's hating me a little bit less. Just a little bit. I don't know if you all are familiar with the woman who sued Johnson & Johnson for cancer. She won a lawsuit against them. She won $417 million. I say good for you. A Los Angeles jury Monday ordered Johnson & Johnson to pay a record $417 million to a hospitalized woman who claimed in a lawsuit that the talc in the company's iconic baby powder causes ovarian cancer when applied regularly for feminine hygiene. I mean, I'm happy she won the lawsuit. There probably is something in the powder that causes cancer. However, can we also get over the whole, like, vaginas have to smell like candy or ice cream or baby powder? Like, can we just let our genitals be? Like, you should not have to put baby powder on your shit. Okay, just saying. The verdict in the lawsuit was brought by the California woman, Eva Echevarria, which marks the largest sum awarded in a series of talcum powder lawsuits verdicts against Johnson & Johnson courts across the United States. Echevarria alleged Johnson & Johnson failed to adequately warn consumers about the talcum powder's potential cancer risks. She used the baby powder on a daily basis, holy shit, beginning in the 1950s until 2016, and was diagnosed with ovarian cancer in 2007. Echevarria developed ovarian cancer as a proximate result of the unreasonably dangerous, defective nature of talcum powder, she said in her lawsuit. Echevarria's attorney, Mark Robinson, said his client is undergoing cancer treatment while hospitalized and said that she hopes the verdict will lead to more Johnson & Johnson products having additional warning labels. Mrs. Echevarria is dying from this ovarian cancer and said that all she wanted me to do was help other women throughout the whole country who have cancer for using Johnson & Johnson for 20 and 30 years. She didn't really want sympathy. She just wants to get the message out to help other women. Oh, wow. I mean, this is like just messed up. Like, I'm kind of sad that she felt she had to use talcum powder on her genitals like that, but it's also incredibly fucked up that Johnson & Johnson opted to not disclose the nature of their products. And then, of course, it's also terrifying because this is baby powder. It is meant for use on babies, you know? So there's that. It'd be interesting to see if they go back, anyone goes back and does a long-term study of babies who whose parents constantly use baby powder and if they're okay as adults. That would be interesting. We'll see what happens. Johnson & Johnson spokeswoman Carol Goodrich said in a statement the company will appeal the jury's decision. She says while she and the company sympathizes with the woman suffering from ovarian cancer, that scientific evidence supports the safety of Johnson's baby powder. Because, I mean, you can just buy your own scientists, right? Basically. Ugh. The verdict came after a St. Louis, Missouri jury in May awarded $110 million to a Virginia woman who was diagnosed with ovarian cancer in 2012. She blamed her illness on the use of the company's talcum powder containing products for more than 40 years. Besides that case, three other trials in St. Louis had similar outcomes, juries awarding $72 million, $70 million, and $55 million. Another St. Louis jury in March rejected the claims of a Tennessee woman with ovarian and uterine cancer and blamed the talcum powder for her cancers. Two similar cases in New Jersey were thrown out by a judge who said the plaintiff's lawyer did not present reliable evidence linking the talcum powder to ovarian cancer. More than 1,000 other people have filed similar lawsuits. Some who won their lawsuits won much lower amounts, illustrating how juries have wide latitude in awarding monetary damages. Johnson & Johnson is preparing to defend itself and its baby powder at upcoming trials in the U.S., says Goodrich. All right, then. I don't know. It's weird to me to use baby powder like that on your genitals, but that doesn't mean you deserve cancer either. So I hope that these women are okay. Like, I'm actually curious now how many of them have passed away or have terminal cancer. Like, it's really fucking tragic. And all to save money, you know? That is, the corporate greed is unreal. It's fucking unreal. All right, what else do we have? Oh, God. I just be looking at the news like this shit exists again. R. Kelly is still back being a rapist. A woman who says she has underage sex with R. Kelly is finally telling her story. Geronda Pace was just 15 when she met her musical idol R. Kelly outside his child pornography trial. Okay. I am going to be that person and be like, where are your parents? Where the fuck are your parents that you're hanging out outside of as a teenager at the trial of a man who's accused of child pornography and child abuse, molestation, all that? That's fucking wild as shit to me. Alright. So she was just 15 when she met her musical idol, R. Kelly, outside his child pornography trial. The alleged underage sexual relationship with him that followed in the subsequent payout mirrors decades of allegations against the star. In 2008, Geronda Johnson was a 15-year-old sophomore from Chicago's south suburbs who cut high school every day to attend R. Kelly's trial on 14 counts of making child pornography. Doesn't the fucking school call your parents and be like, hey, your kid wasn't here today? Is that not a thing anymore? Jesus Christ. The R&B superstar had no bigger fan, and Johnson was quoted in national media stories defending her musical idol. Now a 24-year-old mother of three with the married name Geronda Pace, she tells BuzzFeed News after the trial when she was 16, she became one of the many women traumatized by a sexual relationship with Kelly. Her detailed and well-documented story of accepting cash settlements from the star in return for signing non-disclosure agreements, which has not been previously reported, illustrates how Kelly was able to silence young women he has allegedly wronged. I think that part isn't news, right? Like, I think everybody knew people were getting fucking payoffs and shit. I think. I hope everybody fucking knew that. Several individuals with first-hand knowledge of the situation have supported Pace's claims. Additionally, BuzzFeed News reviewed signed legal documents, drafts of settlements between Kelly and Pace, correspondence between Pace and the attorneys involved, and a polygraph test performed at the request of her attorney regarding her relationship with Kelly. And a probate court document opening an estate for Pace as a result of a civil settlement and a subsequent payment made by Kelly's management company to Pace. Oh, so his manager, so it's not even just fucking R. Kelly doing shady shit and abusing children and silencing people with money. His record company, you say, or management company is fucking in on this shit too. So now I would be really curious to know if some shit goes sideways and they actually get someone to testify against him, can his management court also, or management company also be brought to court? Like, I kind of feel like maybe they fucking should be. Ugh. Representatives for Kelly issued a statement early Tuesday denying Pace's allegations. The allegations against Mr. Kelly are false and being made by individuals known to be dishonest. When in doubt, smear the character. It is clear these are continuing stories. These continuing stories are the result of an effort of those with personal agendas who are working in concert to interfere with and damage his career. Mr. Kelly again denies any and all wrongdoing and is taking appropriate legal action to protect himself from ongoing defamation. How the fuck is it defamation to say that he's a child predator and that he preys on young girls? Like, he's literally on film with a young girl being predatory and sexually abusive. Like, that's not fucking... That's not defamation. That's what he does. That's who he is. Pace is the fourth former member of Kelly's circle to tell BuzzFeed News the star mentally and physically abuses the women closest to him. Kelly has faced similar allegations for years. Yeah. Yeah. In 2005, for example, his then-wife, Andrea Lee, filed for an order of protection in Cook County Circuit Court, alleging her husband slapped and hit her. She later dropped the order. Pace's story is different than previously reported accounts because she was underage when she and Kelly began a sexual relationship. Pace says she is talking now and breaking a signed non-disclosure agreement because she's worried about the women still living with Kelly and what police have about what police have been told is an abusive cult. Pace says she's particularly concerned about a friend she brought into Kelly's circle when they were teenagers who, according to multiple sources, still lives with Kelly. Shit. Kelly has denied allegations of wrongdoing, and one alleged victim, 21-year-old Jocelyn Savage, has said she is doing fine. Her parents and the parents of an 18-year-old aspiring singer from Florida have all said they've been told there's an ongoing federal investigation into Kelly. Now, see, I wonder what the federal investigation is going to say, because he's gotten to a point where he's started intentionally targeting young women who are over age 18, so I don't know what they can get him on. I mean, I hope they can get him on something, but I don't know what it would be. Pace says, if I can speak out and I can help them get out of the situation, that's what I'll do. I didn't have anyone to speak up on my behalf when I was going through what I went through with him. He's brainwashed them really bad, and it kind of reminds me of Charles Manson. I just hope I can help these women out. Kelly needs to be stopped. Damn. Pace says she first became a self-described R. Kelly superfan when she heard his album Chocolate Factory at age 11. My family listened to his music. My friends listened to his music. Everyone was in love with it. Local radio station WGCI was the biggest supporter. They played him all the time, and it's my favorite radio station. Her fandom didn't fade when Kelly was indicted for child pornography. Once the trial began in May 2008, she attended the proceedings every day until his acquittal June 13th of that year. So she ditched, like, a whole fucking month of school, and nobody knew about it, I guess. Or the school didn't call her parents. Like, that's fucked up. Which is another thing, too, like, the perspective of being a child versus being an adult, right? Like, when you're a kid, you're like, oh, I'm out here to support this person, and they're my fan, and it's really important. But in reality, you know, when you look back and you're older, you're like, how fucked up was it that somebody didn't care that you were risking your future academic career because you were ditching school and letting your grades drop and affecting your, you know, extracurriculars and everything else because you were at court rooting for this person who's a fucking millionaire, you know, and doesn't actually need your personal support. Like, what kind of relationship is that? Like, to be framed, you know, like he was loving or he was appreciative. Like, no, he wasn't, because he was letting you fuck up your life for optics and publicity to make him look good. Like, that's not love, you know. Ugh. Let's see. If convicted, Kelly would have been sentenced to 15 years in prison. Let's see. Looking back, hold on, they have a little side note here. While working at the Sun-Times, this reporter received the tape anonymously, turned it over to police, and was called by Kelly's attorneys to testify, and he took the Fifth Amendment rather than revealing sources. Good. Looking back, Pace says she attended the trial because she was a fan and wanted to know what happened. Did he really do it? She recalls wondering, I wanted to see everything for myself. This included watching the notorious video when it was shown several times in court. Prosecutors allege the 26-minute video depicted Kelly having sex with a 14-year-old, urinating in her mouth, and ordering her to call him daddy. So that's basically what he's still doing now with his little sex cult. Because the girl never testified, though 14 other witnesses, including her aunt, did identify the girl, Pace thought, well, maybe it's not the girl. If she would have come forward, it would have made a difference. See, no, it wouldn't have. Don't fucking lie. It wouldn't have made a difference. You were in the fan stage. This was more important than anything, because when her own aunt shows up, you see her on camera and 13 other witnesses show up and you're still like, but she didn't say it was her, so how do we know? You were looking for an excuse not to believe that your fave is a fucking child rapist. Like, don't fucking play that it would have made a difference if she would have testified. You would have found a reason to be like, well, she lies because this, that, and the other. Or you can't trust her because, you know, she is fat. She's fast tail girl. Whatever the fuck it would be, you would have found a reason not to believe her. Like, don't fucking play and say maybe it's not her. It would have made a difference if she would have come forward. No, it fucking wouldn't. Ugh. Outside of the court at the time, she defended Kelly to multiple news outlets. They can't call him a pedophile anymore, Pace, then 15, told MTV. They can't say he likes little girls because he's innocent. Now he's free. Okay. The MTV article reported that Pace was 18, but public records as well as Pace's birth certificate and driver's license show she was 15 at the time, and she admits she lied to the reporters because Cook County Sheriff's officers were not admitting anyone under 18 into the trial. They don't check your fucking ID? Like, how can so many adults fail kids so badly on so many levels, right? So, like, her parents didn't know that she was there at all. No family members knew that she was there. The fucking school wasn't asking where she was when she ditched a whole fucking month of classes. The fucking sheriffs weren't checking her ID. The reporters who were talking to her weren't fucking verifying who the fuck she was. Like, how can so many people fail one child? Pace says she met Kelly when he was walking into the court building. The star seemed like a cool guy and he would always speak to me when he saw me. She even got his autograph, which she provided to BuzzFeed News. He didn't have anything to sign and neither did I, but my friend reached in her pocket and found an old bank slip, so I got his autograph on the bank slip and laminated it. So then he was there with your little friends too. Y'all was at a trial of a man accused of pedophilia and child sexual abuse, and y'all are children, and you wonder why he stops to talk to you. Really? Really? Okay. That meeting with Kelly would not be her last. In May 2009, a friend and employee of Kelly's invited Pace on MySpace to a party that Kelly was throwing at his mansion in suburban Olympia Fields, Illinois. Pace, who just turned 16, says she lied to her parents, telling them she was going to a friend's house. I was nervous. Even though I had already met him at his trial, I was literally at his house, so it did not feel real. She remembers Kelly calling her over to the bar and telling her he noticed her at the trial. He then asked for his cell phone number and entered it. At the time, you know, I was still pretty starstruck and I was in disbelief. Pace says she did not tell Kelly he was underage and would later tell private investigators she claimed to be 19 at the time. But the age of consent in Illinois is 17. But again, like, maybe this seems legit when you're a kid, you know, when you're a teenager. But as an adult, I'd be like, so you just got done and acquitted, barely, of being accused of raping children and being sexually abusive to children, So the first thing you do is hit on a teenager who says she's 19 and you don't check an ID? Right, because you knew she was lying and you just didn't care because you're a fucking child rapist. That's who you are, R. Kelly. Not long after, on June 5th, 2009, Pace says Kelly invited her to come to his mansion and set an employee to pick her up in her SUV. He told me he wanted me to undress for him and walk back and forth like I was modeling. The two then had oral sex, Pace said in interviews, and Kelly made his first attempt to ensure she did not talk about their sexual relationship by having her write out and sign letters stating she had stolen jewelry and cash from him and her parents set her up to blackmail him. Like, baby girl, do you not realize how fucking wild that is? Like, he is intentionally setting it up so that you can never come forward, because if you do, you're going to be accused of lying. You're going to be accused of being a thief. Like, I don't understand what is going on in the heads of these kids. I mean, and maybe it's because they're young and they don't have the life experience, or they didn't have someone to sit them down and talk about what predators are like, you know, but you have to know that him wanting you to sign something saying that you stole from him, right? That's not fucking normal. Shit. On the next visit, June 9th, Pace says Kelly gave her an alcoholic drink he called Sex in the Kitchen, which is also the name of a song he released 2005. I was drunk because I wasn't used to alcohol, Pace says. The two had intercourse, and Pace says she was a virgin, and Kelly thought that was exciting. Oof. Over the next 7 months, Pace says she had sex with Kelly repeatedly, a claim she would repeat during her settlement process. Without asking her permission, Kelly filmed most of the encounters on his iPhone or a video camera. I had to call him daddy and he would call me baby. He wanted me to have two pigtails and I had to go out and find little schoolgirl outfits. See, this again is fucking, like, this is not normal behavior. Like, I think that we are failing our children, especially black girls, by not talking about what a predator looks like. This is fucking predatory. And she probably didn't have anyone to tell her that. Shit. If Kelly was previously unaware of Pace's age, she says she told him for certain that she was 16 on July 17th, 2009. I gave him my state ID. She recalls Kelly told her things were fine, but she should tell anyone who asked that she was 19 and she should act like she was 25. The fuck does a 25-year-old act like? What the fuck that mean? Pace said she started spending weekends in his home. Okay, where are your parents? While she was in the mansion, she had to follow rules, which include dressing in baggy clothes, turning over her phone, asking permission to shower, eat, go to the bathroom, and leave the property. If she broke the rules, she said she was mentally and physically abused. At the time, I didn't know what I liked, says Pace, explaining why she complied. I just knew I liked his music, so I was pretty much accepting of anything at the time. According to Pace, she and her 17-year-old friend, a fellow superfan, who still lives with Kelly today, were hanging out in the mansion in July 2009 when police and squad cars arrived in search of their friend, whose mother had called to complain her daughter was with Kelly. Pace, both when speaking to BuzzFeed News during her 2010 polygraph test, said Kelly called one of his attorneys who advised his star client he did not have to let the police in without a warrant. At the same time, police chief Jeff Chudwin said to the Southern Star, "We were informed of a possible criminal matter. We investigated the issues, found there was no crime, and the matters were closed." Okay. Pace says Kelly asked her to engage in threesomes, including a woman who was best friends since high school with the girl in the videotape for which Kelly was tried. BuzzFeed News previously reported that the woman was still living with Kelly as of the summer of 2016. Pace also says she saw the girl in the videotape at the party and recognized her from watching the video in court. So, now mind you, I mean, I don't want to come down too terribly hard on her because she is the victim here. She was a child and she was definitely manipulated by somebody who is a lifetime predator. But remember earlier she said that the only reason she didn't believe the allegations is because they weren't, the victim didn't come forward. She's like, if I would have seen her, it would have made a difference. Okay, well, you saw her after the fact at parties where Kelly is having sex with teenagers. Like, you had to know. And he was having sex with you. You were a teenager. Like, what the fuck? All right. Pace says she ended her relationship with Kelly in 2010 after the two had an argument where Kelly caught her texting a friend. I was slapped, I was choked, and I was spit on. Pace says she left Kelly's house, but her ordeal wasn't over. The next day, Pace contacted the office of Susan E. Loggins, a relatively well-known Chicago attorney. It was on their website. They worked with women who went against Kelly, and I thought that's a good thing. Loggins declined a comment, but her firm has made extracting cash settlements from Kelly a specialized part of its practice. Okay, when you can make constant recurring payments because he's a chronic sexual abuser, like your fucking job, but people still like, I don't know, how do you know he's really abusive? How do you know? This is how we fucking know. Because literally an entire law firm makes their living this way. Let's see. Loggins first represented three women in the late 90s and early 2000s in cases brought against Kelly in Cook County. After these three publicly filed, Loggins began negotiating other settlements between Kelly and young women she represented before lawsuits were filed. Loggins first sued Kelly for $10 million in 1997. In a suit brought by Chicago woman Tiffany Hawkins, an aspiring singer, who claimed she met the star when he spoke to her sophomore class. According to the lawsuit, Hawkins began having sex with Kelly in 91 when she was 15 and he was 24. The relationship ended when she was 18, and distraught, she slit her wrist in an attempt to kill herself. The charges in the suit were not reported until years later, detailing Kelly's underage sexual relationships. The case eventually was settled out of court, and Kelly paid Hawkins an undisclosed sum. Loggins next sued Kelly in August 2001 when she represented Tracy Sampson, an aspiring rapper who claimed she lost her virginity to the star at age of 17. I was often treated as a personal object and cast aside. He tried to control every aspect of my life, including who I would see and where I would go. That case was also eventually settled out of court for an undisclosed sum. The last public lawsuit Loggins filed against Kelly was in 2002 when she represented Patrice Jones, a Chicago woman who claimed the star impregnated her when she was underage and that one of his associates took her to have an abortion. The lawsuit alleges the relationship began after Kelly met her in 1998 when she was 16. The case was also settled out of court for an undisclosed sum. Pace says she went to Loggins for assistance and was told the attorneys would make her a millionaire. That's when she decided to pursue a settlement instead of criminal charges. If I was to get criminal charges, it would probably be like last time where he wouldn't get convicted, Pace considered at the time. And he wouldn't get convicted because people like you and everybody else was like, I don't know if that's her, even though I can clearly see her in this video for 25 minutes. To verify Pace's story, Loggins asked Pace to take the lie detector test. BuzzFeed News obtained the seven-page document about the test. The results were sent to Loggins in 2010. This is more about the test. This is a really long article. Since Pace was still a minor, Loggins and her mother opened an estate on her behalf, according to Pace and court records obtained by BuzzFeed News, but Pace says she only received a fraction of what she was owed. In 2012, Pace complained to Loggins' assistant about late or missing payments from Kelly. In that period, Pace's settlement was far from Kelly's only expense. In 2009, Kelly had divorced his second wife, Andrea Lee, with whom he had three children, and he was paying spousal and child support, and also owed the IRS nearly $5 million in unpaid taxes. Okay. In 2013, the star sold the Olympia Fields mansion for $950,000 after it went into foreclosure. Down the line, Pace says, and other sources confirmed, she went on to sign a new agreement with Kelly. And Pace's current attorney refused to comment. This is fucking wild as shit. Like, I just don't know what else it's gonna take for people to be like, maybe R. Kelly is a bad guy. Like, there's nothing else at this point. There's nothing. Nothing. You know. You're just pretending you don't know. Like, get the fuck out of here with that shit. Okay, my last one real quick. Missouri Governor Holtz convicted killer's execution after new DNA evidence emerges. A Missouri man who was convicted of murder and slated for execution Tuesday will not be put to death. The governor put the execution on hold after new DNA evidence suggests Missouri could be killing an innocent man. Marcellus Williams, age 48, was convicted in 2001 in the stabbing and murder of Leisha Gale, a St. Louis newspaper reporter, during a 1998 robbery inside her home. Williams was scheduled to be executed this evening, but Governor Eric Greitens has issued a stay of execution and ordered further consideration into his case. The newly acquired evidence shows Williams' DNA was not detected on the murder weapon. I did a little research on this. She was hit with a hammer repeatedly, and his DNA wasn't on the weapon. His DNA wasn't at the crime scene, and they picked up hairs at the crime scene and didn't match his hair. So there's that. Let's see. Oh, yeah. So Williams' attorneys say that his DNA was not detected on the murder weapon, but DNA from another male was found. The DNA testing techniques were not available when Williams was tried in 2001. Hair samples and fingernails found at the crime don't match Williams' DNA either, said Greg Hampican, a forensics DNA expert hired by the defense lawyers. Footprints at the scene also don't match his shoes, said defense attorney Larry Kump. But St. Louis County Prosecutor Bob McCulloch was said that there was ample evidence to convict Williams and there was zero possibility he was innocent. Okay. Let's see. Court documents filed in opposition of a stay of execution by the Missouri Attorney General's office say new DNA evidence does not come close to showing Williams is innocent. It would be unsurprising if Williams, who wore a coat from the crime scene to cover his bloody shirt, wore gloves when he committed the burglary and murder. Our office is confident in Marcellus Williams' guilt and plans to move forward. Also worth noting, Williams' conviction was based on the testimony of two convicted felons who were after a $10,000 reward. One was his former girlfriend and the other was his former cellmate. And also his girlfriend said that he bragged about committing the murder, told her he did it, and was showing him the victim's ID as proof. But the thing is, the victim's ID never left the crime scene. It was always at the victim's house. So very clearly that person was lying. In addition to the murder conviction, Williams is also serving consecutive life terms for robbery and 30 years each for burglary and weapons crimes. If his death sentence is eventually carried out, he will be the second person executed in Missouri this year. I think obviously it's pretty clear that they should definitely do more DNA testing. I think it's also pretty clear that the people who said they heard him talk about it were lying, if you go back and review the case. So I would just like to point out that a black man, again, was convicted of murdering a white woman and given the death penalty with absolutely no physical evidence, no fingerprints, no confession, no DNA evidence, no photographs, cameras, footprints, hair, blood, nothing. And all it took was for somebody to say, oh, he told me he did it. And they convicted him, and not only convicted him, put him on death row. Like, that's fucked up. So, alright, those are my stories for now. I gotta run. Alright, and last story, just really more of a rant from me. There's this website called the Jackson Telegraph, and I'm seeing folks sharing news stories from it. It looks like a professional website. Clearly, these people are paying for it to look professional. And the problem is, the website itself is actually a fake website. It's fake news. Hashtag fake news. And I just wanted to bring attention to that. So they have this story that I'm seeing passed around right now on social media. It says, 12 white female bodies in garage freezer tagged Black Lives Matter. And it's got pictures up that makes it look like a real news story. It's got a mugshot of a black man. It's got somewhere there was a crime scene, and it's got, you know, pictures of the coroners outside. It's got a news logo on it. This is not actually a real story, okay? This didn't happen. The same journalist, allegedly, also wrote about how there was a bunch of black bodies found in in the estate of a former Ku Klux Klan member, and that these bodies had been tortured and so on and so forth. So I just really wanted to talk about this for a minute because these are not real stories and it's important to fact check, especially this day and age. And I think that, you know, it's easy, right? You see something and you're like, oh, I'm gonna click it. It's so easy to click this. You can't just do that. The problem is that when you do and you don't fact check, you're spreading not only fake news, but for cases like this, you're spreading hysteria, right? Like, obviously, the point of this whole website is to just basically talk shit, right? Because posting something about someone who's a member of Black Lives Matter, who is a black man, is out here in these streets, killing white women and leaving them in his freezer. Obviously that's confrontational. Obviously that is feeding into very specific stereotypes. And considering the current racial climate, it's not something that we need, right? You know, and the same thing with this other article about the KKK leader having people buried in his estate. Yeah, that's not true either. And also, I just kind of wanted to address maybe a couple things to look at when you're reading a story. Like, obviously, don't just read the headline, read the fucking story, please. But when you are reading, look at the details they're providing. Does it make sense? You know, is it, does it seem like this could be legit news? Does it seem like this is something that might have actually happened? And of course, you know, there are, a lot of stories going on, especially if you listen to us. We do White on White Crime, right? There's, all the stories from Florida and things like that. So yeah, wild ass things do happen, right? Really outrageous things do happen, but that doesn't mean every outrageous headline is going to be accurate. So this story, here's a couple things. So they say, a mass grave of dozens of tortured black men found in deceased KKK leader's estate, according to FBI spokesman Adrian Cartwright. Cartwright said the mass grave was uncovered when the current owner of the property was making extensive renovations to the house and needed to dig up the foundations. The current occupier was excavating bodies at the southern end of the property when he came across leg bones, said Cartwright. He then notified local law enforcement, who called in the FBI once they realized the extent of the number of victims. Authorities state it's still early in the recovery and identification process, but they estimate the grave to be at least 50 years old and contain upward of 10 bodies. The FBI did not comment on who they believe is responsible or how long the bodies got there due to an ongoing investigation. However, Mississippi records list Eldon Lee Edwards, a U.S. Ku Klux Klan leader, as owning the property from 1945 to 1953. Eldon Lee Edwards died in 1960. He was charged with the abduction, torture, and murder of three black men in 1944, but was never convicted. So that's the story. It seems legit the way it's written. It's professional. It's not, clear satire or badly presented. It's got pictures. It's quoting somebody allegedly from the FBI. But here's the thing. One of the quotes, a mass burial site of dozens of black men who had been subjected to brutal torture, then murdered, has been found. In most cases, body parts are missing. So now we would ask ourselves, how do they know it's black men if they haven't finished identifying the victims yet? You can't look at bones, because this is what they said they found was bones. You can't look at bones and identify the race of the victim, okay? So that is a big red flag there. It also says they were subjected to brutal torture. Well, again, if these are just bones, it's really hard to tell how somebody died if they were tortured, right? Because you can beat someone, you can hit someone, you can burn them, you can do all kinds of horrible things, but by the time all that's left is a skeleton, the flesh is gone, right? So unless the bones themselves are damaged, that's also a huge red flag. When he says in many cases body parts are missing, they said specifically there were 10 bodies, right? So if they're going to contain upwards of 10 bodies, it's going to be hard to determine that, if you think about it, if the body parts are missing. It also says most victims were shot in the head, and they provide a picture in here, but this picture is of a mass grave, but it's from a UK thing, so if you want to research, do the reverse image search, do so. But the particular picture they show is a bunch of pretty complete skeletons laying together. There's no holes in anybody's head. So for them to say several of these are shot in the head, obviously that's not the case. For them to say that body parts are missing, these are very clearly very well put together skeletons that are in this picture. Obviously you can't tell if they were tortured or not. Obviously you can't tell their race. So just kind of, you know, use your common sense, ask some questions, maybe get an alternative opinion from an alternative site and see, you know, you got to kind of fact check it. I really wanted to address that because I see this taking off on Twitter especially, and I'm just like, it's not true, stop sharing it. But the thing is, people are so willing to believe anything that they're not fact-checking. But not fact-checking leads to fake news, and fake news just increases problems. It doesn't solve any problems, right? So we really want to be careful and try to fact check as best we can. And that means not just sharing anything because a website looks professional or has a professional name or claims to quote FBI spokesman, right? We need to do better than that, especially in the current political climate, right? So please, please, please fact check your stuff before you share it. Don't just fall for a headline. Critically analyze the articles. Do the pictures in the article match the evidence? Do the quotes from people in the article match the storyline? You know, there's a lot of things that don't match in this story, and that was the biggest clue to me. It was fake. And then, of course, I Googled it, and this is the only news website, alleged news website, that's carrying it. So, you know, a little bit of fact-checking went a long way here. So just, you know, please, please, please keep doing that in the future, all right? Okay, that was my soapbox moment for the day, I guess. We will be back tomorrow. Tomorrow will be White on White Crime Wednesday. I will try to find some accurate, factual stories for you so we can enjoy that. Otherwise, I will see you all later. You can catch me on Twitter at Uppity Negress, 2 P's, 2 T's. You can catch me on Reading in the Shade on Facebook, or you can check us out at the Social Dissonance page on Facebook. And I'm very excited because I just did a little rant about the importance of accurate news. We have updated our website, winecellarmedia.com, and we will be posting news there. I hope we become your go-to news source because we fact check shit. That matters. And if you would like to help support us in this endeavor, please feel free to do so. You can become a patron on patreon.com/winecellarmediafund, or you can just give us a little bit of a boost on PayPal, paypal.me/phoenixandwilliam. That is it. I am done. I am out. Everybody have a good night. Stay safe. And please come back tomorrow for White on White Crime Wednesday, because that's fucking fun. All right, y'all. Have a good night.